and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast which was once about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about things adjacent to the classical world. I am Marlo Edwards, and I'm joined, as ever, by my intrepid co-hosts, Phoebe Roy and Patrick Wyman.
Hello.
Hello. Took a lot of extra intrepidity this week to make it through this thing.
It really fucking did. We were north of the wall this week. We were in with the fucking Picts for this one.
Yeah.
And this is for you, the listener, because many of you requested that we talk about Megalopolis, which on the surface is about the classical world somehow. But the more you watch it, the more you're like, they didn't even Google the classic stuff that they're talking about. Like, it is one of the most insane, that there's no plot. There's no discernible logic. It's supposed to be about the Catilinarian conspiracy. I don't even think they know what the Catilinarian conspiracy is.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is a mega flopolis.
Heyo.
Yeah.
There we go.
No, I don't think my mic's working. A mega flopolis. Yeah. Good. No, I liked that one.
What's truly remarkable about this movie is that there is no level on which it makes sense as a coherent thing.
Nope.
It's not on the level of the overall plot of the movie.
Nope.
It's themes, nope. It's visual style, or even this was what was so fucked up to me was if you try to follow it from one word to the next, like on the level of a sentence, it doesn't make sense. Like, they string these words together and the words themselves do not make sense in combination with one another. So it's half of the dialogue in this movie is quite literally nonsense.
Yeah.
They're words that do not make sense when you put them next to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know how much they paid people to be in this, because on the surface, they've got quite a lot of big names in this movie, but the movie, it's dog shit. Like, if you were sent the script for this, I don't think, if my agent had sent me this script to be like, do you want to be in this? I'd be like, you're fired. Did you even read this before you sent it to me?
I would think that this was a Baroque way of firing me. That's
oh, yeah.
what I would think.
No, I'm going to ruin your
read
career.
Read it and be like, what did I do? Did I black out? And did I black out and try and fuck your husband? Did I leave a dirty protest in your house? Like, what did I do to you that made you want to send me this script?
Clogged your toilet at a holiday gathering.
Yeah.
I think the most likely thing that would lead to an agent sending one of their clients this script.
It's brutal when you clog someone's toilet, because what do you do in that situation?
I buy a Yankee candle and a secret Santa. What did I do?
There's an increasing scale of offenses committed to justify sending someone this script.
Did I turn up drunk to a much beloved relative's funeral?
Did I flush the Yankee candle down the toilet and that's why it clogged?
Yeah.
I thought you seemed like the kind of person who would really appreciate and enjoy the Yankee candle. Is that what I did? Is that what I did to you?
I saw this and thought of you about the Yankee candle. I'd like to take one quick step back and ask, do you have some sort of ongoing beef with Yankee Candle? What's the context here? Because I'm not saying I disagree.
Phoebe's got a rival brand, Confederate Candle. Fucking Robert E. Lee Candle.
Yeah, she prefers the Stonewall Jackson scent.
Yeah. smells of freedom. Yeah, that's right. We've got our various ranges of candles there. We've got states' rights. We've got stars and bars.
It's actually better for them that way. Is the real high end model?
That's right. That is right.
Yeah, that,
we've got a Ulysses S. Grant candle, but that was made by mistake.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It ended up outselling all the others. Nobody saw that coming, and then it was unfortunately brought low in a corruption scandal.
Yeah, we have a Dukes of Hazzard candle that always sells very well.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yep. It comes with its own little pair of Daisy Dukes.
It does. Yeah.
On it.
Yeah.
It's flirtatious. Yeah. It's a flirtatious candle. Yankee candles, they're just horrible. They just really smell to me like a thoughtless Secret Santa gift.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. that is the scent I actually went with, is thoughtless Secret Santa. So this,
how would you, notes of sandalwood?
Yeah.
In there? Yeah. That's the one.
Mm. Okay, so this movie, right? Francis Ford Coppola, he was trying to make this movie for years, and no studio would touch it. So he basically like sold his fucking winery to fucking make this movie. And I have to ask Francis Ford Coppola, bro, are you okay? Is everything, has he got like early onset dementia or something? Because
so what happened was Aubrey Plaza sent a case of the Francis Ford Coppola wine to her agent for Christmas, and now here we are.
Yeah.
This is the revenge casting. Yeah, however, as I believe I told you in the chat beforehand, Ford Coppola is a truly fascinating director in that he has absolutely no idea what it is that people like about his films, and he also has no idea when he's made a good film. So he looks at his more well known, shall we say, you know, the stuff that people associate with the FFC branding, and he's just like, yeah, but you know, that's just like a kind of, you know, idiotic kind of cash cow that I made in order to kind of fund my real art. So he sees this as like, you know how like lots of fairly literary authors do kind of all sorts of stuff to kind of get, you know, to kind of get their bills paid. So like, so there's one writer who's working at the moment who makes most of their money from writing kind of like write to brief Doctor Who novels. And that's where they make their money, and they make their money like that, so that they can like write their kind of sort of odd experimental novellas, and it's just the way things work. It's the way things work in quite a lot of artistic industries. You got to make a lot of shit so that you can make the stuff that you want to make because people have bills. Coppola has incorrectly identified The Godfather as being a write to brief Doctor Who novel. Or,
which is crazy because Doctor Who's not even in it.
Or like the Polly Pocket, or the Polly Pocket movie, or whatever.
That bit where the Cybermen machine gun Sonny is—it was an odd scene in the film.
It was an odd scene in the film, but oddly, no weirder than the rest of the film. So he made The Godfather, which he knew was going to generate an enormous amount of money, enormous amount of interest, based on this very, very not good at all novel, but he knew it was going to be a big deal, and he made it so that he could make Rumblefish, and nobody has seen Rumblefish apart from me and maybe like a few kind of old balls kicking around,
real sickos
have seen Rumblefish. It is not a good film. It is just about at the level of you might go and see a kind of ultra ironized knowing screening of Rumblefish.
Okay. Like we're so not, it's a lot better than Megalopolis is what you're saying.
It's a lot better than Megalopolis. It's not we're not quite at the room with Rumblefish, but we're hovering around the Showgirls level.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's like a Seagal movie.
That's giving him too much credit.
but this is what he thought was going to be the thing that made him a legend. And
yeah,
that's not what made him a legend. What made him a legend, everyone knows, is Godfather 3.
yeah, that's right.
Everyone knows that. Come on. Everyone knows that the Godfather 3 is the best one.
Nobody, like, I haven't heard this come up in our discussions of, in any discussions of Francis Ford Coppola, but his most enduring bomb to me was the one he made where Robin Williams is playing a child with some sort of growth problem. This movie is called Jack.
What?
Came out in the mid-90s.
What?
Uh-huh. Yes. So basically, the premise of the movie is that Robin Williams, a grown man, is playing a child who is aging at an accelerated pace. And it is so much worse than that premise could possibly communicate. It is one of, it is maybe the worst movie I've ever seen. And I, this is how bad it was.
And you've seen Megalopolis. So
I have. Yeah. It's worse than Megalopolis.
Wow.
Because it's not trying to be highfalutin.
Okay.
It's trying to be like profound about childhood and aging and like friendship and shit like that. And it just, it's awful. It's a truly horrendous movie. Oh, okay. It's bad enough.
Boyhood
that
with a head injury.
So much worse.
Yeah.
It's
Boyhood,
like,
actually is already Boyhood with a head
right,
injury.
All right, Milo, so not this. Not this again. Well,
so, I mean, it's bad enough that it was the first movie that I went to see in the theaters that I knew was bad. It was my first exposure to understanding that something I'm watching is bad. I was like 10 or 11 or 12, maybe somewhere in that range. And I'm like, oh, this is fucking horrible.
Oh, that's such an interesting, you know, like a child developmental milestone, like the first time they watch a movie and understand that it is bad and that the people who made it are embarrassed.
Yeah. Do you remember when you were a kid, the first time you realized that one of your teachers was a moron?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too early of a memory for me. I'm not sure I can picture it clearly.
Yeah, I was going to say I was 3.
Yeah, it's like it's one of those things where you're like, oh, the grown-ups don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's that's what Francis Ford Coppola's non-Godfather, non-Apocalypse Now work represents to me.
Can I tell you what happened when I was 3? And then
yes,
we can
I would like to.
Well. So, when I was 3, when I was little, in fact, Me and my dad used to go on regular weekend trips to London Zoo to visit visit the various critters. We'd go on a little kind of critter trail once every Saturday.
Love a critter trail.
And there was this extremely nice creature at London Zoo when I was a child that was called Mitzi, and Mitzi was a gow. And a gow is it's similar to a buffalo. It's a kind of nice sort of like gentle, shaggy bovine type creature. It's called a gow.
It sounds like what a minor Sopranos character would call a cow. Like,
well,
we had to go out to the fucking country. They had a fucking gow.
Well, it's funny you should say that.
Okay. Yeah.
It must have been at nursery. We were asked what we did over the weekend. And I said, I went to the zoo and I saw a gow. And our teacher said, oh, that's very nice, Phoebe, but we say it cow. And I said, no, I saw a gow. And I would not admit that I was incorrect in order to let everyone else move on and that I'd meant cow. And she got really, really annoyed with me. And then she threw every single enhanced interrogation tactic you can throw at
her. She waterboarded me. That's rough.
First she waterboarded me. Then she
Kneecap.
Said. Then she said I was being silly. Then she hooked me up to the electrodes.
And at no point in this process did she think they don't have cows at the zoo.
Well, they do. They have a little. They have a little children's zoo area that's probably got a cow. It's got goats.
Might call it a paddock or a gentle
I've
barn.
I've never seen
of
a
some
cow.
Sort.
Even in a petting zoo, I've never seen a cow. Really? I have seen goats. Oh, I agree.
This is very common in Arizona. Practically everywhere has got a cow.
I'm pretty sure they had a Highland cow at the London Zoo Children's Zoo when I was a kid.
Okay.
But that's not what I saw. What I saw was
no,
a cow.
No, you saw a cow.
I saw a fucking cow. And then she really, really chucked the really bad one, and she said that I was lying, and she said we mustn't tell lies.
You can't tell a 3-year-old that.
We mustn't tell lies, and it turned into enough of a hoo-ha that she called my parents in for like a kind of parent-teacher conference because I was so acting up and telling lies about having seen this fictional creature called a gow, and my dad was like, I really hate to do this to you, but it's cool.
Is this like proper
cool.
Like MC has lost control of the Saturday night room? There's a stag do at the back. He's having to call the bouncers in, but he's trying to sort of carry on.
They saw you drop me off, Mum, and they did a pretty devastating rhyme about that. Yeah. She did not apologize, this woman. And this was a really formative event in the life of little Phoebe.
This is big, like, origin story stuff, right?
Yeah, it really is. This is biopic stuff.
Yeah, you know, like, when somebody tells you an anecdote about themselves and you're like,
yeah, there we go, there it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's something like this happened to me when I was 17, where at sixth form, like not even at school anymore, like at sixth form college, and our form tutor insisted in the weekly form time we had that was fucking bizarre because it was like a sixth form college with like 2,000 people. You didn't know anyone who was in your form class, but they insisted you have this like hour long form time. And then he'd put together a quiz for us to do as like a form time activity. And it was like with a PowerPoint presentation. And one of the questions was, who is this? And it was a picture of Nigel Farage. And I was like, well, that's Nigel Farage. And then he was like, he goes, Nick Farage. And then I'm like, no, but his name's Nigel. I'm like, he's in the newspaper like every day. Like, that's his name. And I was like, it's actually kind of too easy of a question, really. And he's like, yeah, but his name's Nick Farage. And I'm like, you set the quit. Like, you must have had to type in Nigel Farage to get the fucking picture. Like, if you typed in Nick Farage, Google would have gone, did you mean Nigel Farage? it didn't get me very far. I had to let it go. I didn't call my parents in.
That's one of those situations where, like, okay, so my version of this is I got into an argument with the park ranger at the Gettysburg battlefield when I was 8.
You're like, there's not enough stuff commemorating the South here. I think it's too many candles in the gift shop.
Well, he was wrong about some very fairly basic point of fact the battle that he was supposed to be an expert on. An 8-year-old me was not going to let that slide, obviously.
I was here to sell some Chicago Bears candles.
Yeah, we all have one of these. We all have this where we realize that just because somebody's wearing a uniform and a nice crisp park ranger hat doesn't mean they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
So you're selling all these Chicago Bears candles. What about the fucking Chicago Twinks? How do they feel about this?
Yeah, no, they're not fans. Yeah, they're not fans. No. That's, I do wonder. There's got to be a gay men's chorus in Chicago that is playing off the Bears Twinks divide.
Surely.
What if not missed opportunity?
Your baritones and your fucking sopranos. Yeah.
So, your baritone-y sopranos.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Should we talk about a stupid film?
Yeah, but is there any point in us even trying to do like a plot run through? Because is no plot.
I mean, we can try, but I will warn you that I did not understand the plot.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's a fucking long plot summary on Wikipedia for a film with no plot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fine.
It's one of the longest we've ever had, and we've done movie episodes a lot.
This is a good place to introduce the distinction between a plot summary and saying things that happened. Those are not the same thing. The summary may be full of a list of things that happened in the movie, but whether they amount to a plot summary is a rather thornier question.
Yeah, this movie is kind of a series of vignettes. I think that's the most charitable you can be to it.
Somebody involved had some kind of children's encyclopedia, and they've got this children's encyclopedia of the Roman Republic. Two of the pages have like just never got properly separated, and this is why they apparently think that Caesar and Catiline are the same person.
Yep.
This is the only explanation which makes sense.
Yeah, somebody. So here's my thought. It was a compilation of Latin authors, some of it was in Latin and some of it was translated, and some teenage boy had been beating off to a Catullus poem.
Yep.
And the product of that got the pages stuck together, which is why we have the Caesar Catiline thing.
And that's why Catullus doesn't even exist in this universe.
Yeah, no, the fucking Shia LaBeouf with the no eyebrows quotes Catullus in the very beginning of the movie. He says, "Oh, I hate and I love to fucking Natalie Emanuel."
Oh yeah, fuck. Yeah, and there's also like random Shakespeare quotes in it as well, which is like decide what you're riffing on.
Yeah, they kind of do like right at the start they do They do a bit of delivery, like, you know, in films that have like that use like kind of Shakespeare dialogue and modern dress, like some of which are some of which more successful than others.
Romeo plus Juliet, etc.
Romeo plus Juliet. Can I make it any more obvious? There's also a really good version of fucking Much Ado About Nothing, which I think.
Oh, is that the one with Kenneth Branagh and...
No. That's not a modern dress one. That's a really good Much Ado About Nothing. This is an entirely modern dress Much Ado About Nothing. Modern dress and Shakespearean dialogue. And I think it might have been directed by Joss Whedon. I know that seems really unlikely, but I think it was. Anyway, it's really, really good. It's got your man in it from... Buffy on a spaceship. What was it called?
Firefly.
Firefly.
The guy. What's that fucking guy's name?
You know who I mean, though.
Yeah, I know exactly who you mean.
Wyman Roy axis in action here. Buffy on a spaceship, and then imagine being like Firefly.
I mean, I just can't remember the name of the main character. I could tell you most of the other actors from that. I'm Marina Baccarin. I know her.
Alan Dudek.
Alan Tudyk is pre long run of solely making his money off of doing voices for Disney movies. Yeah. Alan Tudyk.
I know the guy.
Yeah, so he's in it. Okay.
So what they do is they do that kind of delivery. You know, if you're doing like Shakespearean dialogue, and particularly if you're doing it in modern dress, you have to do a kind of. You put the emphasis in a weird place, and then you suddenly start talking very quickly, and you suddenly start talking slowly, and it's to indicate that you are not speaking in a contemporary way, but this is how you're speaking instead. So they sort of do a bit of that at the start, then they abandon it entirely.
Bit of actor voice.
They abandon that entirely. As Milo observed, there is a point at which they start speaking Latin for no appreciable reason.
I fucking lost it at that bit. I was watching it at like 1 a.m. in the flat I was staying in Edinburgh, and I was like, why are they talking in fucking Latin? This has not been introduced up to this point at all. And then it abruptly stops after about 45 seconds. It never comes up again.
At first, they are not like speaking exactly in blank verse, but like, it's quite like blank verse, and then it reverts to just regular dialogue, but not quite regular dialogue, more like something that's been fed into a large language model. Or like somebody kind of like hurriedly like trying to do like that, like in like a kind of like a foreign club, and they're kind of hurriedly trying to kind of put things into Google Translate so they can speak to people.
It's like, have you ever heard like a Scandinavian child who has clearly learned English in school, but has never spoken English with an English speaker.
Yes.
That's that kind of vibe is how the language in this movie sounds. Yeah. Like, or alternatively,
Megalopolis.
Exactly. Like a really nice Norwegian kid from fucking north of the Arctic Circle, who's gotten an excellent education in English, but has never interacted with an English speaker.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, if you took a large language model, put it in the brain of somebody who played in the NFL for 20 years and ended up with like repetitive brain injuries.
I felt like I had played in the NFL for 20 years while I was watching this film.
Yeah, it is a punishing experience watching this movie.
So, the C in CT actually stands for Caesar Catalina.
Or Coppola.
So thank you to the numerous hogs who got us to watch it. I don't feel at all antagonistic towards you at all.
Now we've got CTE, so thank you for that.
Cheers.
Can I run some stats by you for this movie?
Please do.
The movie is 138 minutes long, and Francis Ford Coppola spent $136 million making it. So that's almost $1 million a minute.
I'll tell you when you can see every dollar of it on screen.
You can. Do you guys know what it took at the box office?
No.
4.7 million.
It is a 0.7, actually.
What is it?
13.7 million. It took 10% of its budget.
Yeah.
I mean, 10.7, that's still loads. That's still so much money.
I'm surprised it made that much money. That seems, after having seen it, that seems charitable. That seems like there may be some stat padding happening there.
Well, there's so many big names in it. I mean, like, you've got fucking John Voight, who turns up in every bad movie for some reason.
Yep.
Like, he made Deliverance and then he gave up.
Yep.
You've got Adam Driver.
He was great in Anaconda.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Correct. You've got Adam Driver, who I personally don't care for, but is objectively a hot property. Giancarlo Esposito, who's like a great TV actor in massive stuff. And then Aubrey Plaza, who I personally love. I mean, Shia LaBeouf, who, to be fair, has gone insane. Lawrence Fishburne. Dustin Hoffman is in this.
Jason Schwartzman's in it.
Yeah.
Knocking around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy the people have got in this.
I mean, so my actual belief is that these people were like, I got to work with Francis Ford Coppola once. And it was like a bucket list thing for all of these people.
Yeah.
And no matter how fucking insane the script was or how bizarre the process of making the movie was, they were like, I can knock it off the bucket list. That's because Adam Driver famously does not watch his own performances. Once he has shot the scene, he absolutely refuses, as a matter of principle, to view what he's done.
Okay.
Interesting.
So even during movie premieres, he leaves the theater during the movie premiere and then goes back to his seat afterward and pretends to have been there watching it the whole time.
It'd be very funny if he only left during the bits where he was on screen. He's like running in and out, kind of Joey Tribbiani
style. That would
be
hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, so he doesn't know how bad this was, and thank God for him. I mean, that feels like a blessing for that man.
Yeah.
Everybody else who was forced to watch it, do you think they regret their participation, or are they like, I was in the most insane movie that's ever been made?
Yeah, maybe they do see it sort of as a badge of honor.
Maybe they thought it was going to be a kind of a sort of rejig of Apocalypse Now, because at the time, like, Heart of Darkness was pretty widely understood to be unfilmable. So maybe they thought, like, okay, well, this, he's done it once. This script looks pretty unfilmable. This is pretty fucking opaque. This is not such a dissimilar experience to reading Heart of Darkness. Not really, because you don't understand what's going on, but you know that you've got a kind of creeping sense of dread. Similar thing. Maybe he's gonna produce something of a similar nature.
I love the smell of Megalon in the morning.
Shall I
attempt to do a rough plot summary?
Please, just to illustrate exactly how useless an exercise it is.
Yeah, so I'm just exactly. So as a warning to the listener, I'm gonna yada yada some of this because I've not pre-read this summary and God knows what the fuck it says.
Can we interrupt if we have objections?
But please. Okay. In an alternate United States, New Rome, which is, it's New York, but it's New Rome, is dominated by an elite group of patrician families. Although the Roman elites profess to live by a strict moral code, patricians decadently enjoy forbidden pleasures while ordinary Romans live in poverty. That isn't really made clear. I mean, it's made clear that there are rich people and poor people, but in that case, that's just any city in the world ever.
No, they do. They do make it clear when they have Crassus's son, Claudio. Again, they're not sure whether they're being Shakespearean or Roman. Decides to rebrand himself as Clodio. Ayo, someone's been doing some Googling. They don't understand what it is they've looked at. They don't understand what it is they've read, but they know that there's a guy called Clodius who rejected his patrician roots and attempted to, you know, kind of make common cause with the ordinary people of Rome. Yeah.
Was he Crassus's son? No.
Absolutely fucking not. Was Crassus a member of the Claudii? Absolutely fucking not.
No.
Most certainly not. Were they even living at the same time? No. Yeah. No.
Were Catalina or Caesar's fucking Crassus's sons either? No.
No, 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 no. They were not.
Can't be in the triumvirate with your own son.
No,
it's frowned upon.
It's illegal. So So that's all taking place. And then Clodio at the end is like, oh, I'm going to unleash the mob. I'm going to unleash the mob on the patricians. But unfortunately, this happens with about 4 minutes of the film to go. And it's irrelevant.
Would you like to address the fact that old man John Voight shoots his wife in the heart with a little Cupid bow now, or shoots Clodio in the ass?
I think we've got to get to that.
It's hard enough to understand in the context in which it comes
without it being out of context. So okay, so my problem, right? I'm not going to number my problems with this film, because honestly, I'm not one of life's mathematicians. I don't know if I can count high enough that would allow me to enumerate all my problems with this film. Number one, they do not make it clear whether or not this is, it's definitely like a kind of alternate future. Like that sort of much is clear, because there's some kind of like steampunk shit around. There's some, you know, sort of gold stuff that kind of waves around. You know that when there's like kind of floaty gold stuff, that when like someone's not looking at a screen, they're instead looking at some floating gold stuff, you know it's meant to be an alternate future. Either on an alternate future or like there are wizards. And we sort of have both. It is not made clear under any circumstances whether this is an alternate future where there has been such a thing as Rome and the Roman Empire. So every so often we have a voiceover saying, in old Rome, this shit happened, and in New Rome, very similar but not at all the same shit semiotically happened. They're also like very much using like the semiotics of like the kind of the decadent and decaying Roman Empire, and every single legitimate historical name they use is from the Republic. And it is, and this was a different set of semiotics, even contemporaneously with itself. So the fact that they can't even get it right 2,000 years later is angering.
Also, the USSR canonically exists in this alternate future, because the satellite that is about to that crashes at some point is a Soviet satellite.
Yes, but the airport
fucking Chekhov
doesn't.
Satellite. There's nothing.
The USSR exists, but the airport doesn't.
Yeah. We'll fucking get onto that.
We'll fucking get onto the fucking airport.
Let's get back to what passes for a plot.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, patrician architect Caesar Catalina. This is Adam Driver playing, but the role of both Caesar and Catalina, and also simultaneously neither of them.
This is Adam Driver doing his best Ron Burgundy impression.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's an architect. He's apparently received the Nobel Prize for inventing the revolutionary building material Megalon. I knew that he'd invented it, but I did not hear about the Nobel Prize. And then it says here in the summary, very revealingly, he also secretly has the ability to stop time. Something which they keep bringing up. Does it affect the plot in any way? Oh, you sweet summer child.
It does show Natalie Emmanuel Julia, who is Cicero's daughter, Mayor Cicero's daughter. It does show her seeing him doing it, and you think, huh, this is presumably going to affect the plot in some way, but it doesn't, apart from the fact they have a conversation where he says, oh, I've lost my powers, I can't stop time anymore, and she's like, yeah, but a painter can stop time, you taught me that. It's like, yeah, but that's semantics, Natalie Emmanuel. He can literally stop time, and that's what he's talking about. Like, you're just engaging in casuistry there.
The movie doesn't actually change if you entirely remove that element.
No.
There's no, it's just there, and it's very confusing. And that's frankly true of most of this movie. This could have been a clean 80 minutes.
It's all Jenga blocks floating in midair. Like, you can pull out any ones that you want. It doesn't matter at all.
You could pull out the entire plot line that where Adam Driver and Natalie Emmanuel get together and have a child. You could remove that and the movie doesn't change, basically.
Yeah.
So I think basically what we've got is, and I'm about to make a reference which is going to reveal my age in a very upsetting way.
Okay.
But once upon a time, there was a TV show called Dawson's Creek. And the main character of Dawson's Creek Once upon a time, gather around, children.
Yeah, in the old times.
In old Rome, there was a TV program. It was called Dawson's Creek. It was about some unruly young people who lived on a creek and they forgot the ways of the old kings.
Yeah. And they didn't want to wait for their lives to be over.
They did not want to wait for their lives to be over. Not want to wait for their lives to be over. And
yeah. Dawson, sort of motto you'd have for a suicide pact.
It's like, honestly, what the hell was going on with those kids? Those kids in that damn creek. What were they up to?
And that's the next thing we're doing for this show, is all of Dawson's Creek.
Those precocious little...
And we're making it about ancient Rome.
So Dawson is supposed to be this, like, he's supposed to be a film guy. He's supposed to be a huge film guy. And there's all this stuff about, like, he wants to be a director. He's got his favorite movies, and he's like, he's the film guy. But for some reason, it didn't occur to them to come up with some, like, actually kind of, like, esoteric or interesting or even, like, non-mainstream directors for him to be into as a legitimate 16-year-old film guy would be. And instead, he is just a Spielberg super fan. And he talks about Spielberg all the time. He just wants to be a director like Spielberg. And that's kind of what this film is. We have like a kind of, we have like the tribute sections, but it's like the tribute sections of the most middle brow film student you can imagine. So we have the Nolan section. We've got the dead wife. We've got the floating time stuff. We've got like people flying up in the air and then going, boom. We have the kind of the sort of slightly incomprehensible plot.
No Zimmer horns, unfortunately.
No
that
Zimmer
really
horns.
Would have added to
that
this
really
movie
would have added something.
Yeah,
no Zimmer horns. But everything else we've got. That's the kind of the Nolan section. We also have, as I said to you two in the chat, we have the Hunger Games section. But all of it feels like somebody who has only been exposed to the Hunger Games, and then, after having been raised in a bunker, watching and reading The Hunger Games, they have come across the Roman Republic and latterly the Roman Empire and have said, God, getting big Hunger Games vibes off this.
Do you remember the movie with Brendan Fraser where he played a guy who had spent his entire life in a fallout shelter? It was kind of a romantic comedy-esque movie.
This is ringing a bell.
Yes!
Yeah. That's how this movie feels, as if the only exposure this person had to the Roman Empire and Roman Republic was being locked in a fallout shelter with
Brendan Fraser,
a vague pieced together summary and some random quotations.
So basically, so Adam Driver sees Cassian. He's an architect. He's like in charge of like redeveloping the city, but he has this. Apparently he's an alcoholic. He's boffing this hot chick called Wow Platinum, who's played by Aubrey Plaza. Aubrey Plaza's chewing the scenery in this movie. She's the only person who's enjoyable to watch in it.
I think John Voight actually handles himself pretty well.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
He knows what movie he's in and he's going for it.
Yeah, just the character of Crassus is so like thinly drawn. I feel like there's more fun you can have with the Wow Platinum character. Who was so named? Phoebe dug up this particular nugget. Why was it they called the character that?
Okay, because, and I quote, they wanted a name which would just really evoke like kind of awe and wonder, and just like describe how captivating she is. So basically, they asked a 4-year-old, "What would you call somebody who invoked awe and wonder?" And they were just like, "Wow."
I know a lot of 4-year-olds, and that's fucking insulting to 4-year-olds. That's I know how my daughter names her stuffed animals, and she would never name one of them Wow Platinum.
Okay, fair play.
That's maybe again, if the 4-year-old had head trauma.
I'm kind of interested to know what your daughter's naming conventions are for the stuffed animals.
Oh, they're great. She has a small tiger whose name is Little Mike.
After Mike Tyson.
No,
the tiger thematics are there.
She was 3 when she came up with this. She's like, "This is Daddy, meet Little Mike." Like, okay, I thought, all right, we can go with that. That sounds fine.
That's adorable.
She has Little Howler, who's a wolf. Baby Jellybean, also a wolf. The puppy, who is a puppy. Mr. Snuggles.
Who's a shark.
These are all her.
Quite formal, Mr. Snuggles.
Please, Dr. Snuggles is my father. This is
Mr. Snuggles
because
he's actually a surgeon. It's a professional title. Yeah.
But yeah, so I have to say she would not name a stuffed animal WoW Platinum. Nor would she name a blonde attention seeker. She is the conniving slag.
Conniving MILF. I think that's fair.
She's verging on MILF territory.
There's one point at which she refers to herself as Auntie WoW.
Yeah.
That's a whole thing.
There's the bit where she seduces Shia LaBeouf, and despite the fact there's something about Shia LaBeouf that like fucking weirds me out. I don't like watching him in anything. And especially in this movie where they've made him faintly repulsive in this movie. I don't know what it is. But there's a scene where WoW Platinum Aubrey Plaza is seducing him for her own wicked ends, and I'm like, no, fair play, that was hot. That was like an enjoyable 2 minutes in the movie.
You enjoyed it when she keeps calling herself Auntie. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Look, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very much on the same page as you here, Milo.
Yeah,
that's I
don't know what to, they're.
I was into it.
Yeah, because they're trying to make fucking Julia the love interest in the movie. And look, Natalie, what's her face? She's a beautiful woman, but she's not.
She hasn't got it, has she? You know what? You know what the problem is with Natalie Emmanuel? She is one of the surprising number of Hollyoaks to Hollywood. Production line.
Wait, she was in Hollyoaks?
Natalie Emmanuel was in Hollyoaks. She played Sasha Valentine.
Pat, I know you are quite an impressive Anglophile, but I don't know if you've ever come across Hollyoaks.
No, that is below. That is well out of my sight.
Yeah, Natalie. What's even weirder
is
the number
soap opera, but like not even one of the main ones.
Like a
relegation zone soap opera.
Yeah, it's the.
It's you're getting sent down to the championship.
It's the championship soap opera.
It might even be League One.
I'm gonna say this right about now. I am a loyal Hollyoaks watcher. I have been watching it since I was a teenager. I still watch it now. It has become garbage beyond all possible belief, but I still watch it. I still keep drinking that garbage. And there's a surprising number of former Hollyoaks actors who are now like relatively big in the States. Whether or not they can act is sort of irrelevant. Did you see the adaptation of American Gods, which wasn't very good?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The guy in that, he used to be in Hollyoaks. What is even more surprising is that there is not just a significant Hollyoaks to Hollywood production line, but there is a Hollyoaks to Hollywood via Game of Thrones production line. This is what Natalie Emmanuel came out of. And yeah, she's a lovely looking girl, but she's
too good
like
looking for Hollyoaks, arguably.
She is a charisma vacuum.
Yeah.
She's like watching somebody paint a wooden board.
Jesus God, that was harsh. You're not wrong. I'm not going to say that you're wrong.
She about half Adam Driver's age, and not in like a kind of like, okay, like she's 22, he's 30, like it's fine. Like they look like different species.
Yeah. He looks
I would like
say
an aging
fairness,
greyhound.
He would look absolutely right in fucking Hollyoaks, actually, Adam Driver.
No,
that's not correct. Like Hollyoaks is oaf territory.
He looks older than he actually is. He's not that old. He's like 40. He's like 42.
Is he?
Or 43 or somewhere in that range. Was. Yeah.
I didn't think he was that old. I thought he was in his late 30s.
I think I thought he was younger, but just has like just one of those kind of odd looking faces.
He's the only guy in Hollywood who looks older than he actually is.
Huh.
Every other one, like they're fighting aging with tooth and nail. Adam Driver looks his age. He looks like a 40-something-year-old.
But it doesn't make them look younger. It just makes them look uncanny.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like the best anecdote I've ever heard is I know a woman who got some Botox and she asked, you know, is this going to make me look younger? And the injector replied, no, it'll make you look like every other woman your age who's had Botox. And that's kind of the deal in Hollywood, right? Yeah. Like you don't look like Ryan Gosling doesn't look 25. He looks like a 40 something year old man who's had a bunch of Botox done. That's the.
Yeah, but he's starting to look a little odd as Ryan, which I think is rather a shame.
Yeah. He's no Gosling anymore. He's going to have to become Ryan Goose sooner or later. Goose dressed as Gosling. There you go.
We've got to try and
So,
power through this.
So basically, So Adam Driver sees a Catalina. He has this rivalry with Giancarlo Esposito, who is Mayor Cicero. Like it's fucking Goodfellas. Yeah, Pauly Cicero. Whoa. But it's not really clear because he like works for him. He's just like the fucking the city planner and he's the mayor. And they're trying to make out like the central conflict of the movie is between the two of them. Spoiler alert, it's not. Insofar as there is a fucking central conflict in this movie, which you would be hard pushed to find one. But the central conflict is arguably between Adam Driver and fucking Aubrey Plaza or Aubrey Plaza and everyone.
Yeah, kind of, but it's sort of like Aubrey Plaza is supposed to be a kind of like a newscaster, like
yeah, Megyn she's Kelly. I mean, she's seeking fame, and at first she's like a television personality who's fucking Adam Driver, and then she goes after his rich uncle Crassus and marries him, and that's when she becomes anti-WoW platinum and has the sordid but hot affair with Shia LaBeouf, as we've discussed.
Monsieur LaBeouf. And,
well, I mean, but because you got to remember that up before the Norman invasion, then he would have been, you know, Shia Cow. It's only after Norman invasion that they started with the euphemisms.
Shia Cow, it's like it goes along with the Iranian regime. It moves in a way that indicates its support for the fourth caliph.
He's been running arms to Hezbollah.
Yes, very good. Yeah, so basically, yeah, he's shagging Aubrey Plaza, and then she's like, well, you have to marry me because I will want to be, like, you know, in a power couple. And then he's like, no, I'm still in love with my dead wife who I keep in a weird floating suspended animation in, like, a Goldilocks house. This only comes up in the movie once.
But I didn't kill her. I didn't kill her. And everyone's like, I didn't think you did.
Yeah.
I do now.
My I didn't kill my wife t-shirt raising a lot of questions already answered by the t-shirt.
My I didn't kill my wife floating substance with the dead wife's kind of trapped looking face in the substance raising a lot of questions.
It makes a point of Giancarlo Esposito prosecuted Adam Driver for the murder of his wife, but that it came up empty. He was acquitted, which of course means he didn't do it. Uh-huh. So,
yeah,
just like OJ.
I have a question. I have a faux naive question.
All right.
Presumably, since it's set in New Rome, and we have these. And we have these, I mean, forget about him being called Caesar, but we have these two rival gentlemen who had a real life republic, well, middle to late republic rivalry resulting in one of their deaths. So presumably we are presented with a kind of delineation of the vastly contradictory ways in which they both think Rome should be, like their opposing and competing visions for Rome. Presumably this is laid out in some detail so that we understand what the rivalry is. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be Robert Moses versus like Fiorello LaGuardia set in ancient Rome, That's my guess. Or like whatever New York mayor Francis Ford Coppola idolizes.
It's certainly not a retelling of the Castellarian conspiracy, which is what they keep billing it as.
No, it isn't at all. Like,
quick sidebar on the Castellarian conspiracy. Catalina, former soldier, Roman nobleman, wants to basically overthrow the consuls of that year, 63 BC, one of whom was Cicero. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's exactly the same type of communist that you are.
Woke King Catalina.
Woke Catalina. The world's first cat boy. So he... And he, yeah, I guess on this whole conspiracy to try and overthrow Catalina. I believe Crassus was actually incidentally involved in kind of tipping off Cicero and co. that this was happening.
Yeah, but I think Cicero, it was incidental.
Yeah, Cicero makes these very famous speeches in the Senate against Catiline, one of which is quoted in this movie in a context which makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, that's also true.
So you get this, yeah, quousque tandem abutere patientia nostra, Catalina. Like, how long will you abuse our patience, Catalina? At an event that's being hosted by fucking Crassus and is entirely, it's Crassus's wedding. And Cicero gets up and makes this speech of like slagging off Catalina in quotes from an actual Cicero speech from 63 BC, but in a way that it doesn't, he's not even saying anything. How is he abusing anyone's patience?
Because what triggers this in the movie is a faked, like deep fake porn that is broadcast at the wedding of Adam Driver having sex with the Vestal Virgin, or a singer who's pretending to be a virginal youth
who's actually a woman off American Idol.
Who I think is meant to be a Vestal Virgin, but the Vestal Virgins in this are meant to be like doing. Like the Super Bowl halftime show?
I don't fucking understand. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's quite a lot like the Taylor Swift scene in Cats.
This is weird. Okay, so
just if you're trying to kind of, if you're trying to plot this on your graphs.
Yeah, long story short, Adam Driver is trying to remake the city into the megalopolis of his dreams. He faces opposition from Mayor Frank Cicero and from his own conniving family.
There's a fun conversation where they're talking about how, like, you know, the problem with utopias is that they can turn into dystopias.
When he wrote that line, he thought that was a fucking banger.
He thought that was a good line.
Yeah, because also, like, one of the things they're trying to set up as a conflict for Catalina's architectural venture of redesigning the whole city is that, like, he's demolishing these buildings, some of which where, like, poor people live. And then they're like, he's demolishing our homes. Poor people have to live here too. But then the whole project is about building houses for literally everyone in the city. So why didn't they just tell these people that? They were like, oh, no, don't worry. We're actually going to build you a house, right? Because they seem to be under the impression that they're just going to have their houses destroyed. And then, when the whole point is, like, full, like, social housing. That's part of his plan.
Yep.
Yeah it's like...
We like our slums!
It's a bit, like... It's a bit Batman-y as well.
Yeah. But it has the aesthetic of Spy Kids. I texted this to the group chat while I was watching it. You watch this movie, you're like, they reused all the sets from Spy Kids. What the fuck is going on?
I cannot overstate how visually baffling this movie is.
They spent all the money on the focus group that named WoW Platinum. Yeah, that's why they had to reuse the sets.
Somebody help me budget. My family's dying. So as we reach the end of the movie, I guess these conspiracies come to a head. Shia LaBeouf is trying to take over the bank that his grandfather Crassus owns while he's fucking Aubrey Plaza.
Because she's trying to make him do it.
Yeah, she gets him to do that.
Hence the anti-WoW bit.
Yeah. The best bit of the movie.
Yeah. I think the birthday party also has some stuff to recommend it, which we can get into here shortly. I think that birthday party is the only way in which this film has anything to say about Rome at all. And to the extent that, like, this movie's portrayal of rich patricians who wield political and economic power is almost uniformly negative, except for the figure of Caesar Catalina, more on him to come. But so I actually think it captures something of the idiot venality of the late Republican elite.
Yeah.
And their kind of performative overspending and performative largesse. And I think it kind of nails that.
Yeah.
Whether it was trying to or not, the idea of just like throwing money at the mob. Again, I think that pretty tried and tested late Republican political strategy worked really well.
We even get a fucking chariot race.
We did.
I felt for Phoebe when a chariot race came up.
You can't escape him.
Your
I paused
favorite.
It and left the room. I had to. I just remembered as well. There's a bit where Driver says to Natalie Emmanuel, "You should go back to the club," and he says it like that. That's how
you go back to the club.
The club.
It's very weird. He actually he says it kind of like a Norwegian child who speaks good English would
in
say.
In the club. And also there's a bit where he fucking quotes Hamlet.
Why does that happen?
There are several options of Roman plays. Among them, fucking Julius Caesar that he could have quoted. So
I didn't get a. That one wasn't included in the ejaculatory
document of ejaculate, the cum Bible.
On which this movie was based.
the cum Bible, which is the origin story, which is the origin
the
source
the
material.
The Wemmy Biblia, yeah.
Yeah, the seminal work.
There we go.
Yeah, it is.
So unclear whether
I've wanked on my lerb too much, and now I can only read the Latin side.
And now I have to go back to the club, because it's the lerb and it's the club edition.
Yeah.
You know
good.
What? Fuck this. fuck this entirely. It's unclear whether or not this is supposed to be something that he's come up with spontaneously, or is he was meant to be quoting Shakespeare, who exists in this universe. Not clear.
Yeah. But speaking of things that exist and don't exist in the universe, one of the big inventions for the Megalopolis that he's going to build is the fucking Travelator.
Yeah.
And he,
what the fuck is the Travelator?
Yeah. So he brings Cicero, Mayor Cicero and his wife down to the park, and he's like, look at this shit. You're skeptical about Megalopolis. And it's actually just do they not call it a Travelator in America?
A moving walkway.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So a moving walkway. So something that every airport in the world has. He's like, and they're like, this is amazing. Maybe you are going to build a megalopolis. And it's like, am I fucking high right now? Well, I wish I was.
I was very high.
Yeah.
While I watched most of this movie, and that didn't help.
Yeah.
It usually, at least I would say, it doesn't hurt. It certainly did not help in this case. It did not make it any more comprehensible. It didn't make it seem any more interesting either, which is like, usually I feel like if I've been ripping on the Benjamin and I'm watching a movie like this, I can at least appreciate some aspect of its batshitness. Like that will at least get me into a space where I'm like, you know what? One good thing. We can find a good thing about this. I really struggled with that.
Yeah.
To find even one redeeming quality to this movie, aside from its utter commitment to the bit. It's completely self-serious.
It is,
There's no satire, mocking.
There's no quipping. There's no eyebrow raising.
Nope.
What I've actually put here in order to link it back to this show's origins, which is I've put that is the directorial equivalent of George Costanza's Jerk Store. So everyone is telling him to change it because it doesn't make any sense. And he keeps saying, no, the line is Jerk Store. This whole film is 2 hours and 20 minutes of the line being Jerk Store. Or, as I have put here, Irumata Copia.
Yeah. It is a movie they would go and see in Seinfeld.
It is, yeah.
You've not seen Megalopolis?
But it's so Megalopolis. But it's so funny to have like such a kind of, it's such a funny storage house for like such like a kind of milquetoast liberal message, which is like kind of like the mob is bad, all extremism is bad. Like these two could like find this kind of balance between their wildly different visions for Rome. Except you never get told what those visions are. Like every so often, someone says like, oh well, you know, Caesar and Caesar Catalina and his utopia. It's like, yeah, but. A apart from the houses and the travelator and the floating substance with the dead wife in it, what is Cicero's Roman conservatism? Like, there's some stuff about how, like, the Colosseum has to stand, otherwise Rome falls, and if Rome falls, the rest of the world goes with it. And again,
Colosseum's not been built yet. It's 63 BC.
Because we're in New Rome, but it's also in Old Rome. They could just as easily be like, well, what's the fucking Colosseum? Oh, sorry, never mind. The Flavian Amphitheatre. What the fuck's a Flavian? Who's that? Yeah. Oh, Flavor Flav, that guy. We have him in this audience.
Yeah, Flavor Flav canonically exists in the world of Megalopolis.
That massive steampunk pocket watch they're standing on, that belonged to him.
Yeah,
that was Flavor Flav's going out.
Yeah, that's his gala wear.
Yeah,
this is just, I don't understand. So a major point of the movie is that Adam Driver has invented this miracle material called Megalon. And that he's going to build Megalopolis out of it. But it's never actually made clear what Megalon does. Yep. It's basically...
Oh, it's a kind of magic goo.
Yeah, it's magic.
Yeah, that
he's a wizard.
It's
Cicero's a wizard. Magic,
but this is the whole thing, is it's just magic goo?
Yeah.
It is like, they made a cast out of Megalon for the dog's leg. Like, why wouldn't you just use plaster? What's wrong with making a fucking dog's cast out of plaster? Like, why do we need the Megalon for this? Presumably the stuff is expensive. I don't...
This
I
is like just the hedge fund guy that lets his dogs drink smart water, you know? It's like that kind of like... It's conspicuous consumption.
And then Adam Driver uses the Megalon to regrow his face after an assassination attempt.
Oh, is that how his face gets better?
Yeah, he gets shot in the face and then comes back to life, which is literally a plot point from fucking Gangs of London, which is one of the most loosely plotted shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all very, very confused. Like, I fear that we have made this sound more coherent than it actually is.
So is the Megalon the
Megalonolus?
The Megalomolus. Is it supposed to be like an organic material?
See, these are the kinds of questions that you would think would be asked and answered at some point for the benefit of the audience, but they never are.
Yeah.
Is it like a 3D printer but for wizards?
Yeah, maybe.
I think you've put more thought with that question. You put more thought into Megalon than Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, because I think something that we need to communicate to the listener here with this movie is like
Francis Ford Coppola.
There we go. Yeah. there's a lot of cope in this movie. Is that it's constantly attempting to have a plot. So there are things where you're like, oh, surely now this is going to be the plot. Like when Adam Driver gets shot. No, he's just completely fine. The bit where fucking Frank Cicero comes around and he's like, you got to stop dating my daughter. I'll do anything. I'll even let you build the Megalopolis. And then he's just like, no. And then that whole plot line goes away. There's no bumpy stuff at the end of
it. He builds it anyway. He doesn't give up Natalie Emanuel and he builds the Megalopolis.
Yeah. And then it's like fucking, Aubrey Plaza is going to take over Crassus's bank and then she's going to ruin him. No, that just goes away because Crassus shoots her with a fucking toy bow and arrow and then shoots Shia LaBeouf in the ass. Oh yeah, also Shia LaBeouf's gonna build up a rabble and they're gonna overthrow Mayor Cicero and Catalina. No, because then they're just like, actually Megalopolis is good.
They're like, actually Megalopolis is good and Clodio doesn't have our best interests at heart after all, and so they string him up upside down. And again,
like Mussolini.
Like,
Mussolini!
Yeah, that's like supposed to have like some salience, but like not like, yeah, like he's not meant to be like, I don't think he's even meant to be that bad. He's just meant to be like a bit of a jerk. And then there's wow, isn't that happy about being scorned by Catalina in favor of Julia from the club, who by the way like spends most of the film wearing these like kind of like club wear tunics. Mm. But they just look like actual going out clothes from like 2009. They don't look like tunics at all.
Yeah, Jane Norman exists in the in the Megalopolis universe. Yeah.
I'm just gonna say this once, and feel free to judge me for it. But also, real disturbing or confusing, all baffling stance on bras for Natalie Emanuel in this movie.
Interesting.
Again, this probably says a lot about me, but I was quite distracted by whether from one scene to the next, her slinky gowns included that or not, because it was I found it very distracting.
Okay.
She's a beautiful woman. You can get distracted by that.
Yeah, but it was just like, I'm just like, is she wearing a bra or not? Are we, what are we, like, what are we going
for? The nipples exist in this universe or not? We're not clear.
It's unclear.
You don't see anybody else's nipples, so what's the answer?
Yeah. Yeah. But she's not hitching her dress up and calling herself Auntie Wow, so, you know.
Is Megalon anything to do with, nipples?
Could be a substitute material for them.
I've been given a nipple cover out of it.
Kind of nipples, yeah. Sort of like nipple shields, like in the George Pasties. Clooney Batman.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotta have nipples on the suit. I am really afraid that we have made this sound like it hangs together better than it does.
Oh, yeah.
Because these are all separate things that are linked only by, like, where they appear in the film. Like, there's no actual, like, explicit connection between these various pieces. No. It's like trying to, it's like playing pickup, like 52 pickup with plot points. They're all just scattered all over the place amid a whole bunch of random images that are supposed to be profound, but I'm just like,
yeah, we found some more Spy Kids scenery. Stick it in there. Yeah.
It's trying to piece together a sesh based on the location and, like, severity of different bruises on your body.
Yeah. Well, they keep trying to make, like, characters seem interesting by just having them do weird stuff. like fucking Adam Driver's just, like, constantly, like, sat on a girder, like, 400 meters in the air, like, pondering. And it's like, dude, this is so dangerous. Like, why have you, like, gone out there to think? Like, what, just almost die every time you need to think? Like, what?
Why can't you ponder in a chair like the rest of us? Like, what's wrong with having a ponder in a chair?
The wind up there has got to be crazy.
Yeah, it's all very confusing.
He's got a special Megalon strap, which is going to prevent him from falling off the girder.
He's getting WoW Platinum to wear the Megalon strap.
Yeah, I was going to say, that one kind of left itself out there. They've invented Megalon as a miracle material, but it turns out what it's best suited for is just pegging.
Yep.
It's infinitely flexible, you know?
And that's what it's going to get used for.
Yep. Nothing hits the prostate like Megalon.
that's the tagline. Have you thought of becoming a Megalon entrepreneur? Because I think that would sell.
Yeah. I feel like I grew a prostate watching this film. I don't know what I mean by that, but I feel like that's something that happened to me.
In the sense that this film is very much the product of an aging man who has thoughts, but they're not coherent ones. That's I think the connection.
Okay, there. Yeah, and like, that was very generous of you, Pat. I think I'm just sort of talking at immaculate random.
No, because this movie does kind of make you feel like you should go get a prescription for Flomax to make sure that you only have to get up once during the night.
Just watching this film, I just think I should get to the doctor. I don't know what for, but I feel like I might need just a kind of general checkup. The big climax at the end of the film is that Catalina and Caesar Catalina, two different men, by the way, two completely different fucking men, and with different vibes. They're not even like the kind of like you know, sometimes when you have like an adaptation of a book and they squish two similar characters into one character for kind of ease of comprehension. Caesar and Catalina were not similar guys.
They certainly weren't even in league with each other.
They were not in league with each other. They, you know, famously not even that keen on each other, the Caesar and Catiline.
Mm.
But Caesar, Catiline are two different guys. And like for a minute, I honestly thought that there was going to be some like big payoff with he is actually two guys. One is Caesar and one is Catalina. And that's how he survived being shot in the face by a 12-year-old Sam. Yeah, exactly. Prestige, illusionist, things of this nature. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Parent Trap, you know, all the greats. all the greats. So Caesar, Catalina and Julia, that doesn't happen, by the way. Caesar, Catalina and Julia have a daughter, and they do this whole kind of like, she is now the future of New Rome. She is what Rome is all about. She is going to be, you know, unite our warring houses. And Romeo and Juliet again. But again, they haven't got warring houses. And like the baby, while a nice baby, is like just a baby. There's no like particular reason to think that she's a kind of chosen one of any description. But the one thing that I did write in a note about the baby is that they show her right at the end of the film. And she's kind of like peering into some magic water. There's a bit where Wow is talking to herself in some magic water. Which is like Harry Potter. It's like that thing that they have in the Harry Potter films. And they show the baby, and the baby is wearing a little pair of socks. And I have put in my notes, this is more of this film's lack of plausibility that the baby has agreed to wear socks and hasn't taken them off and thrown them somewhere.
Hugely ahistorical.
Yeah, it's not even wearing the little sock braces that you have to put on them to.
You can get sock braces for babies. They do exist.
Yeah.
They're really cute. They're little like kind of garter things.
You don't want to know where they were before they became sock braces.
No, you don't. You certainly do not.
Reduce, reuse, recycle, Pat.
We have to recycle that one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that gets it out, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can do another one like this. This makes the Oliver Stone's Alexander or the Centurion movie that we watched seem like real lean, tight 90s thrillers. It's baffling. It's baffling in ways that I can't even begin to describe.
Yeah.
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 You just want to ask why. Wouldn't it have been easier for Francis Ford Coppola to sell his winery and buy an RV and just tool around the country? I don't know. What is it with very successful men as they get into their 70s and they're contemplating their own mortality where they're like, I got to do something. And it's this, build a water park for kids or something. Yeah, I don't know.
You want to give all your money away? Give it to a soup kitchen.
Megalopalooza. Yeah.
Megalopalooza.
The big water park.
Or like really go out like a kind of like a mad rich person in times past. Like go out like a Rockefeller. Try and steal some indigenous art and end up getting killed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or make a really cool movie like Sallow the Musical. Just really do something that's going to piss people off.
Yeah.
I mean, what the people really want here is a sequel to the 2012 masterpiece Dread. That's what the people want.
That's true.
And
that's what
Francis Ford Coppola could have given us that, and instead we got this pile of shit. Which has a lot fewer interesting things to say about the world, quite frankly, than the 2012 masterpiece Dread.
In order to fund Sophie's Choice 2, we had to do a lot of product placement. So unfortunately, a lot of the movie does focus on her tossing up between a couple of different meal deal options.
Yep.
But that was only because we did a tie-in with Boots the Chemist.
Oh, Christ. I will say one mildly positive thing about this movie.
Right.
It's not really that positive. It has a charmingly Roman belief in the power of rhetoric to move people.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
There are four pieces of actual ancient Rome that come through in this. The venality and stupidity of the aristocrats. Uh-huh. Despite their wealth and power, these people are not like good or smart or worthwhile in any meaningful way. Yep. Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, maybe just two things. The fact that Francis Ford Coppola really seems to think that like rhetoric is what makes people do things, like that you can give a nice speech and it will convince people and that will change their world.
Mm.
And there is something kind of charmingly Roman about that.
Yeah, yeah. There is a bit where someone says like, we're taking our country back. And I did just write, oh, come on.
Yeah.
In response
fuck off.
To that.
Fuck off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just.
Someone does say the die is cast though, right at the start.
Fuck me. People love saying that.
People fucking love saying that. They do it just to upset me.
Yeah. This movie would have been improved by the character of the town crier from HBO's Rome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That would have been fun. I also 100%. Think, once again, it's another thing that would have been improved by Omid Djalili playing any role in this movie. Omid Jalili as Mayor Cicero. Omid Jalili as Crassus.
See, the thing is that what Marlo has failed to disclose here is that he is now Omid Jalili's agent, and this is why he keeps suggesting Omid Jalili for
unsuitable
roles.
Yeah.
After a Secret Santa incident, we don't actually talk about it. It's a
Secret Santa in the sense of like undercover boss.
Yeah.
Like Santa's dressed up as an elf and he's seeing what they're really up to on the production line.
Yeah, it's a lot of smoking weed going on in the production line. Actually, because it's the North Pole, cocaine? Elves do cocaine canonically, or have we?
Well, I mean, they're on a production line. I imagine like cocaine would be more. That would probably be quite a stressful job if you were on weed.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, weed is more like groundskeeper at a golf course.
Yeah. I can see that.
Like the guy who tends the reindeer. That guy is an herb head.
Yeah, not a lot of golf courses in Lapland.
Yeah, unfortunately. Great spot for him. Hey, you never know. Global warming.
Yeah.
Could be the next great golf market.
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about ice golf?
Just out of curiosity, do we have anything more meaningful to say about this movie at all?
I don't think we do.
But I also don't want to end on what about ice golf. So could we end on something else?
Yeah.
Giancarlo, man, what were you thinking?
Oh, no, I've got something. I'll read to you the thing from Coppola's Wikipedia that I liked.
Oh yeah, I want to hear this.
Okay. It's just a very short sentence, but I think it's beautiful. This is from the section on his early life. Although Coppola was a mediocre student, his interest in technology and engineering earned him the childhood nickname Science.
Wow. You know you're getting bullied at school when you've got the nickname Silence.
Silence, yeah.
Science. Yeah.
Sound of silence.
And so, yeah, there is a baffling exchange in this movie about string theory that happens.
Oh, yeah.
So exactly the kind of thing I would expect from a guy whose childhood bullies nicknamed him, quote, Science. What the fuck, man. Not a lot of good stuff here to work with. Wow.
Yeah.
That's 2 hours and 20 minutes I'll never get back.
I mean, you might do if you merely adopted Caesar Catalina's capacity to stop time.
Yeah, that's true. What I really need is some Megalon,
which as far as we can tell is just a kind of time glue. Jam it in.
Well, the Megalon is the cum that's sticking together all of the pages in the ancient history textbook.
It's the cum of the
cum. It is effectively ejaculate.
It's the cum of the cum Bible. It's the seminal fluid which gums together the different parts of the epic poem. It's what you call upon when you're trying to remember what the next thing is. It's an epithet, if you like.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's the wine dark sea.
Can we please never discuss this again?
Absolutely.
Yeah. When they say gray-eyed Athena, what they mean is that Zeus has been getting a bit frisky. But.
Ugh. Fucking hell.
Well,
dude,
that's as good a time as any to say thank you for listening.
I actually feel like that's an entirely appropriate note on which to end this discussion. I feel like that's weighed a better bit than anything
that
in the movie.
That is the money shot.
That is the money shot.
Which boy is it?
Yeah, every shot in this movie is the fucking money shot. It costs $1 million a minute to make. Yeah, every shot in this is fucking, you know what, you know, we didn't enjoy watching it anywhere near as much as Francis Ford Coppola's accountant didn't enjoy watching it.
Yeah,
he's like, oh no. Yeah. But yes, thank you for listening. This has been a free one.
Yeah,
it's a free one. So yeah, thanks for tuning in. There's more shit like this on the Patreon. Head on over to the Patreon. I'm now going to start putting the free ones up on the Patreon as well, because I know people have asked for that on the Patreon and we have resisted doing it, but I will I will now kowtow to public pressure and do that. So if the convenience factor was putting you off joining the Patreon.
Bow to the mob. And so just
I will bow to the mob.
Doesn't end up
take your country
down.
Back.
We're going to take, yeah. We're going to take, our,
take your Discord server back.
That's right. Call me Claudio Pulca the way I'm bowing to this mob.
I would like to apologize for the fact that I have still got a cold after 2 weeks. I'm really sorry.
And, yeah, I was taking that really personally at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry about my snotty voice.
Oh, please feel better.
Yeah. Auntie Phoebe will be back next week and in better form.
I hope so.
Yeah. Reprising the role of Auntie
right.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. We'll be like, wow, she's better.
Not Auntie Wow.
Oh.
Wow.
No.
Pro Wow.
Yeah.
Pro Wow.
So, yeah, thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.